Not then. The train rolled into Penn, and I got a late dinner in a place directly across the street from where I had gotten breakfast. Then I walked up to the 14th Precinct on West 35th. The night watch had started. Theresa Lee and her partner Doherty were already in place. The squad room was quiet, like all the air had been sucked out of it, like there had been bad news. But no one was rushing around. Therefore, the bad news had happened somewhere else. The receptionist at the bullpen gate had seen me before. She turned on her swivel chair and glanced at Lee, who made a face like it wouldn't kill her one way or the other whether she ever spoke to me again or not. So the receptionist turned back and made a face of her own, like the choice to stay or to go was entirely mine. I squeaked the hinge and threaded my way between desks to the back of the room. Doherty was on the phone, mostly listening. Lee was just sitting there, doing nothing. She looked up as I approached, and she said,
"I'm not in the mood."
"For what?"
"Susan Mark."
"Any news?"
"None at all."
"Nothing more on the boy?"
"You sure are worried about that boy."
"And you're not?"
"Not even a little bit."
"Is the file still closed?"
"Tighter than a fish's asshole."
"Okay." She paused a beat and sighed and said,
"What have you got?"
"I know who the fifth passenger was."
"There were only four passengers.
And the earth is flat and the moon is made of cheese."
"Did this alleged fifth passenger commit a crime somewhere between 30th Street and 45th?
"No," I said.
"Then the file stays closed."
Doherty put his phone down and glanced at his partner with an eloquent look on his face. I knew what the look meant. I had been a cop of sorts for 13 years and had seen that kind of look many times before. It meant that someone else had caught a big case, and that Doherty was basically glad that he wasn't involved, but a little wistful, too, because even if being at the heart of the action was a pain in the neck bureaucratically, it was maybe a whole lot better than watching from the sidelines. I asked, "What happened?" Lee said,
"Multiple homicide over in the 17th. A nasty one. Four guys under the FDR drive, beaten and killed."
"With hammers," Doherty said. I said, "Hammers? Carpentry tools? From the Home Depot on 23rd Street, just purchased. They were found at the scene. The price tags are still on them. Under the blood." I asked, "Who were the four guys?"
"No one knows," Doherty said.
"That seems to have been the point of the hammers. Their faces are pulped, their teeth are smashed out, and their fingertips are ruined."
"Old? Young? Black? White?"
"White," Doherty said. "Not old. In suits. Nothing to go on, except they had phony business cards in their pockets with some corporate name that isn't registered anywhere in New York State, and a phone number that is permanently disconnected because it belongs to a movie company." Chapter 41. Doherty's desk phone rang, and he picked it up and started listening again. A friend in the 17th, presumably, with more details to share. I looked at Lee and said, "Now you're going to have to reopen the file." She asked,
"Why?"
"Because those guys were the local crew that Lila Hoth hired." She looked at me and said,
"What are you, telepathic?"
"I met with them twice."
"You met some crew twice. Nothing says these are the same guys."
"They gave me one of those phony business cards."
"All those crews use phony business cards."
"With the same kind of phone number?"
"Movies and TV are the only places to get those numbers."
"They were ex-cops. Doesn't that matter to you?"
"I care about cops, not ex-cops."
"They said Lila Hoth's name."
"No. Some crew said her name. Doesn't mean these dead guys did."
"You think this is a coincidence?"
They could be anybody's crew.
Like who else's?
Anybody in the whole wide world. This is New York. New York is full of private guys. They roam in packs. They all look the same and they all do the same stuff.
They said John Sansom's name, too.
No, some crew said his name.
In fact, they were the first place I heard his name.
Then maybe they were his crew, not Lila's. Would he have been worried enough to have his own people up here?
He had his chief of staff on the train. That's who the fifth passenger was.
There you go, then.
You're not going to do anything?
I'll inform the 17th for background.
You're not going to reopen your file?
Not until I hear about a crime on my side of Park Avenue.
I said, I'm going to the Four Seasons. It was late, and I was pretty far west, and I didn't find a cab until I hit 6th Avenue. After that, it was a fast trip to the hotel. The lobby was quiet. I walked in like I had a right to be there, and rode the elevator to Lila Hoth's floor, walked the silent corridor, and paused outside her suite. Her door was open an inch. The tongue of the security deadbolt was out, and the spring closer had trapped it against the jamb. I paused another second and knocked. No response. I pushed the door and felt the mechanism push back. I held it open 45 degrees against my spread fingers and listened. No sound inside. I opened the door all the way and stepped in. Ahead of me, the living room was dim. The lights were off, but the drapes were open, and there was enough of a glow from the city outside to show me that the room was empty. Empty, as in no people in it. Also empty, as in checked out of and abandoned. No shopping bags in the corners. No personal items stowed either carefully or carelessly. No coats over chairs, no shoes on the floor, no signs of life at all. The bedrooms were the same. The beds were still made, but they had suitcase-sized dents and rucks on them. The closets were empty. The bathrooms were strewn with used towels. The shower stalls were dry. I caught a faint trace of Lila Hoth's perfume in the air, but that was all. I walked through all three rooms one more time and then stepped back to the corridor. The door closed behind me. I heard the spring inside the hinge doing its work, and I heard the deadbolt tongue settle against the jamb, metal on wood. I walked away to the elevator and hit the down button, and the door slid back immediately. The car had waited for me. A nighttime protocol. No unnecessary elevator movement. No unnecessary noise. I rode back to the lobby and walked to the desk. There was a whole night staff on duty. Not as many people as during the day, but way too many for the $50 trick to have worked. The Four Seasons wasn't that kind of a place. The guy looked up from a screen and asked how he could help me. I asked him when exactly the Hoths had checked out.